From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. This weekend, the BBC's long-running series Doctor Who makes history when Jodie Whittaker becomes the first woman to assume the title role.
Hold on there, please, madam. I need you to do as I say. This could be a potential crime
scene. Why call me madam?
Because you're a woman.
Am I? Does it suit me?
Yes. It does, and it has for a long time. Women have played pivotal roles in science fiction for generations. A new anthology digs into that history. Georgia Tech professor Lisa Yazyk is editor of The Future is Female, 25 classic science fiction stories by women. Lisa, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me today, Virginia.
Can you establish for me, is sci-fi okay, or can we say that? No?
We can, yeah. You know, it definitely is not always the words that everyone want to use. You want to be fancy and say, oh, it's science fiction or speculative fiction. But it's a big tent and it appeals to a lot of people. And if sci-fi is what we want to call it, I say let's go for it.
So maybe a big tent, but we've seen plenty of women on covers of science fiction books and magazines and comic books and movie posters, generally looking like fictitious bodies as far as I'm concerned. Right. Why has sci-fi so long been considered as a kind of male space?
Well, I think because it's about science and technology. We think about it as being a genre for boys and their toys. And we tend to associate men with science and technology and then so with building the future. But, you know, what's so exciting is that everyone wants to be part of the future. And lots of people have gone to science fiction to talk about different kinds of futures.
Well, I learned so much in this book. I'm not a big science fiction reader, although mm-hmm. I've certainly read some. But a number of women authors have had gender-neutral names. Mm-hmm. Others used initials or male pen names. Mm-hmm. We learn in your book that that's not really always just to appeal to male readers, but to protect their identities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the first and most important thing to remember, and you'll hear this frequently from contemporary science fiction authors of both of any sex or gender, really, is that you have to protect your name and make sure you don't flood the market. You don't make a ton of money paying writing science fiction. So it is often in your best interest to write a lot of it and to put it out under different names. And one of the things we know, of course, is that both men and women have historically done that. And that women, in particular, when we talk about, oh, they've hidden themselves or they used androgynous names, that was true, but it was rarely because they felt like they had to protect themselves from other men or from readers in the science fiction community. It had to do with larger patterns of culture. So, for instance, Catherine Lucille Moore always went by C.L. Moore, and this was in her, she started her career in the 30s. And for a long time, people thought, oh, she didn't want to be discovered as a woman. But the reality was she was actually protecting her day job at a bank during the Great Depression, and she knew that if her boss knew she had any other line of funding, that she'd probably lose that job.
And similarly, Alice Sheldon, who became James Tiptree Jr.
Yeah.
What was she protecting?
Well, she was one of the first CIA agents in America, so I think she just had spook behavior ingrained into her, and she was just protecting her true identity. But also, more importantly, she had just received a PhD in psychology and was launching an academic career. And so she was really protecting that career as much as anything else.
One of the foundational texts for the genre of science fiction altogether is Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley's Frankenstein. And we cannot resist hearing from one of its many adaptations, Mel Brooks's Young Frankenstein.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Well, your book gets to another assumption that there were no great women science fiction authors after Shelley until the feminist writers of the 1970s. And those who did write were writing like men, you know, about boys and their toys, right. the veneration of technology. Right. You consider their role a lot more transformational. How?
Yeah. Well, first of all, there were actually quite a few women in the science fiction community. Women have always been a significant and vocal minority from the 1920s, when the first magazines were established, until the revival of feminism in the 1960s. Women accounted for about 15% of all contributors to the science fiction community. And interestingly, that maps pretty well to the numbers of women in science and engineering. And then after the 70s, those numbers doubled in both sets of fields. So that's interesting. But yeah, women were there from the beginning, and they certainly wrote about all the same kinds of things that men did. Sleek spaceships, the mechanics of space travel, exotic aliens, fantastic planets. But they also thought a lot about the impact of science and technology on us on Earth, and especially in the home. If you think about it, it's really one of the first places where we do meet advanced sciences and technologies is in our everyday life in the home. We engage with everything from, you know, plumbing, which we don't think about, but we shouldn't take for granted, to our media devices, right, to microwaves. And so Women thought about that, like, how do these transformations in the home affect us and as wives, as mothers, as lovers, as children? And then also, what is it that women can do to go out and change the future in the public sphere?
Well, female science fiction authors also wrote about politics, the evolution of women's health. Yeah. I'm thinking of stories like Margaret Atwood's novel, The Handmaid's Tale, which, yeah, you know, was not a short story, so it's not in this book. But it imagined a future where women are relegated to vehicles for human reproduction and survival is under attack. This has been adapted into a hit TV show.
Yep. You girls will serve the leaders of the faithful and their barren wives. You will bear children for them. Oh, you are so lucky!
So, Lisa, how did the freedom of science fiction, did that allow women to discuss issues like reproductive rights and sexual agency? I mean, these are topics that didn't usually exist in public spaces, especially for women.
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, as long as you're telling a story about, like, the blue aliens oppressing the yellow aliens on planet Z, right, then that's not about Earth. So, absolutely, it gives you a lot of freedom to explore issues that can be difficult to talk about in the here and now. So, for instance, women were real leaders in the anti-nuclear war movement in the 50s, and they were leaders in creating that kind of science fiction as well. Women used this to talk about the first Battle of the Sexes stories, to think about the relations between men and women in the public sphere. So one of the stories that I talk about is Leslie Stone's The Conquest of Gola. That's in the anthology. It's a story from the early 1930s, and it's one of the first Battles of the Sexes stories. And how could it be more timely, 10 years after the suffrage movement had succeeded and gotten women the vote?
And also one of the first narrated by a woman.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the first stories also where aliens win against humans. So a lot of firsts in that particular story.
I'm speaking with Georgia Tech Science Fiction Studies professor Lisa Yazyk. Just ahead, we're going to discuss how female science fiction writers help inspire women in STEM fields today. This is On Second Thought. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Before the break, we were talking about the formative role women authors have had in science fiction, among them Alice Sheldon. Her novella, Houston, Houston, Do You Read?, was adapted by NPR in the 90s as an audio drama.
And then I started watching, looking for the patterns, something missing, something wrong.
Sheldon and other prolific female sci-fi writers are featured in a new anthology by Georgia Tech professor Lisa Yazyk. It's called The Future is Female. So it's funny thinking about, I was reading something about a woman who was asked to write a science fiction book about women. And she said, what do you want? Bridget Jones meets the Matrix, you know, robots who want to talk about their feelings. So is there a way that even presenting accomplished women writers, there's this kind of bent towards you must be doing genre fiction. You must be doing something for women only.
That's so interesting. And to a certain extent, I can see that because historically, that was one of the ways that women made room for themselves in science fiction was to call attention to the fact that women operated in the present and would likely be in the future as more than just love interests or damsels in distresses or even alien queens, that they might occupy all kinds of roles as scientists, as pioneers, even as high-tech housewives.
Well, in fact, you quote in the book, Lee Brackett, she wrote in 1944, readers are tired of the yarn based on the superhero and the ravishing babe. So they were offering something different.
Absolutely.
So how did that grow the genre?
Well, it helped allow women, it provided women with more of a voice. There have always been women in science fiction, but it really gave a lot of women something to talk about with each other and with other fans in the community. Another thing that women's science fiction really did was it pushed character development in science fiction, and that was actually really huge in terms of getting mainstream recognition for the genre. The genre had long been about big ideas, and people really celebrated that. And characters were often, especially in the first decades, pretty flat. They were vehicles for conveying those ideas. But as Brackett noted, you can only do so much if you're just relying on really basic stereotypes, and the stories get boring pretty quickly. Science fiction authors or fans, they pride themselves on being smart. They want to be challenged. And so I think when you bring to them stories about housewives who are worried about the impact of nuclear weapons on the nuclear family, or even depictions of human men who really struggle with their feelings about the alien other, that it provides us with a way to connect with these stories at a human level and at a sort of emotional level as well as an intellectual one.
Well, among the 25 authors in your book, Octavia Butler, and a contemporary author, N.K. Jemisin, mm-hmm. whose Broken Earth trilogy has won the Hugo Award for Best Novel for the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. Here she is at the awards earlier this year.
I've gritted my teeth while an established professional writer went on a 10-minute tirade at me for mentioning underrepresentation in the sciences. I've kept writing even though my first novel, The Killing Moon, was initially rejected on the assumption that only black people would ever possibly want to read the work of a black writer.
So she's talking about discrimination she felt as a woman of color in the genre. How have female science fiction writers of color helped expand these ideas of race and class through their work?
I think that Black women writers have been particularly good at drawing our attention to intersectionality and the complicated ways, not just that the future is female, but that it might also be of color and queer and disabled and poor as well as wealthy. And, you know, William Gibson, he's a pretty famous contemporary science fiction writer, once said, it's not that the future isn't here, it's just that it's distributed unequally. And I feel like authors like Jemisin and Butler remind us about the promise and perils of those unequal distributions.
You mentioned earlier about how few women, or what a small percentage of women there are in technology fields. Mm-hmm. And so the things that the design of technology that we use every day, mm-hmm. the infrastructure, the information, not necessarily represented by women, mm-hmm. and that reading science fiction writers can inspire women in the sciences. I'm wondering if you've encountered that as a professor, as a teacher.
I have. So, of course, there's the big famous examples. And the two big famous examples are astronauts Pamela Melroy and Mae Jemisin, local Georgia woman, in fact. So that's wonderful. But they've both spoken very passionately about how authors, including Anne McCaffrey and Octavia Butler, really inspired their career. And I think it was Melroy who, when she went to the International Space Station, actually took copies of Anne McCaffrey's novels and she would take photos and send them back. But I have had that. In fact, just last week, I had a wonderful example of what we're talking about, the way these stories can move not just the famous people we know through the media, but people in our everyday lives. So I was having a meal with one of my research assistants. I actually had an undergraduate research team who helped gather biographical information for this book. And one of the people I was working with, she's a bioengineering major at Georgia Tech and minoring in science fiction, and so she had been doing this research with me, and she's getting ready to graduate. So we were talking about her future plans, and she was very excited. She said, I finally figured out what I want to do. And she's like, I really want to go work in new reproductive technologies because so much of reproduction is still based on male models, and we don't really think about using women as the fit models for their own reproductive technologies. And I want to work on this, and I want to think about ways to make it cheap and free and easy to distribute across the world. And she got really excited, and then she stopped and looked at me and said, you know, the reason I've decided to do this is because after all that research I did with you and reading all these stories by women and reading the stories of these women's lives, it really occurred to me that no one is going to change the future if women don't do it for themselves.
Wow.
So the future really was female for 5 minutes at my coffee table, and it was amazing.
And how about now, as you look at the future, all of the world building that has been done in fiction by these women, how does it help us imagine the world differently?
I think it shows us that there are different possibilities, right? That women have not always had a voice in the future, and we don't necessarily always agree with the futures that are offered to us. And this is true, of course, for all kinds of people, people of color, queer people, even straight white men don't necessarily agree with the futures that we receive through the mainstream media. So it's exciting to see science fiction open this up and that we're living in a moment where, especially with digital technologies, lots of people can get their visions out and really show us lots of different ways the future might be.
Lisa Jacek, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me on today.
Lisa Jacek is a Georgia Tech professor and editor of the anthology The Future is Female, 25 Classic Science Fiction Stories by Women.